Welcome back to Zero Signal. I'm your host, David, and tonight we're going to walk into one of the most radioactive what-ifs of the last century, a theory that refuses to die no matter how many official reports say the story is over. You've seen the memes, the YouTube thumbnails, the TikToks with grainy black and white photos. Adolf Hitler didn't die in a bunker. He escaped. He slipped through the ruins of Berlin, rode a rat line out of Europe, and ended up in the mountains of Argentina or hiding in some sleepy South American town. Most of us were taught one clean ending in school. What we're going to do tonight is something different. Not announce a verdict, but lay out the long, weird trail of documents, eyewitness accounts, submarines, secret files that keep this story alive for a lot of people. We're not here to tell you how he did escape or how he didn't. We're here to show you why, 80 years later, so many of us are still asking the same question.
Argentina. You may have heard of this nation for its football, its tango, or maybe its beef. But this Southern American country hides many secrets, and I'm about to take you to see one of them.
Between the never-ending flow of beer, to the restaurants dedicated to the art of the sausage, to the lush green forests blanketing this town, you might guess that I'm in Germany.
But you're totally wrong. I'm all the way in Argentina. This is Villa General Belgrano. It's a small town nestled in the Sierra Mountains of Córdoba, which is a province right in the center of the country. And even though this town is only home to about 6,000 people, it's known for holding one of the biggest Oktoberfests in the world. Every year, thousands of people come here from around the world to take part in the beer making and worse traditions that dominate this town.
There are many locals here that continue to maintain German traditions. There's a group that has built a German community center, and they hold special German events using typical traditional German clothing, like Oktoberfest.
Villa General Belgrano is one of the few historically German-speaking villages that dot Argentina. And while visiting here may seem like all fun and games, this tiny town is home to a dark history that many know little about. It was an escape haven for the Nazis. Some even say that Hitler passed through. Let's go back in history.
When World War II broke out in Europe in 1939, it changed the face of the world, even all the way in the most southern point of Latin America. Here in Argentina, General Juan Domingo Perón was rising to power in the 1940s, bringing along with him fascist-friendly ideas. And even though Argentina appeared to condemn Germany for the atrocities committed during the Holocaust, when the war ended, a secret apparatus had been set into place to help Nazi criminals escape prosecution by allowing them to hide in Argentina.
From the moment they arrived in Argentina, the Nazis spread across four different points. The most important were Buenos Aires, Bariloche, Barrio Rio Negro, and right here in Córdoba. What the Nazis were looking for when they arrived in Argentina was a similar kind of climate and temperatures to their homes. Topographically speaking, we're talking about mountains and lakes, places that look just like Germany and Austria.
According to historical records, Hitler died in a bunker in Berlin in 1945. But there are also theories that the Nazi leader actually escaped to Argentina that same year in a secret submarine. Some say he lived his final years among these very mountains.
I believe they're more than rumors. Hitler was in the province of Córdoba, specifically in a town called La Falda. He was there in 1947, according to lots of data that I've collected from multiple sources in the area.
Pablo Weschler is a journalist that has been filming a documentary about Hitler's alleged escape to Argentina since 2005. And he says he has the information to prove it.
First of all, I traveled to La Falda and I met with local historians that provided this information. I interviewed Miss Catalina Gomero, one of the only two people who agreed to speak about this. She said in 1947 she was a waitress and served Adolf Hitler in Hotel Eden in La Falda in the course of 3 days. Hotel Eden is just a couple dozen kilometers from Villa General Belgrano. And what is for sure is that Hitler was in the province of Córdoba. There are also reports that say the Eichhorn family in La Falda were making lots of preparations to help Hitler arrive to Hotel Eden. This information comes directly from the Americans. The FBI passed this information along to Edgar Hoover, who at the time was the director of the FBI. The question I still have is, why didn't they go after him?
We'll never truly know, but Argentina is a nation of complex contradiction.
My family is from Cordoba, Argentina, and has been here for generations. We're Jewish, and luckily for me, my grandmother and her immediate family escaped to here from Europe when World War II broke out. That's why, as a teenager living in Cordoba, I found Argentina, my family's country, a nation full of confusing contradictions. In this country, many Jews have found a safe haven, but so have many Nazis.
Here in Villa General Belgrano, the village has managed to maintain the more charming side of its history. In 1932, the village was established by German immigrants. And until today, the shops here hawk artisanal products, all sorts of pickled goods, and chocolates, the vestiges of the town's Central European history.
My grandparents came from Germany and Austria. They already knew there was a German colony here that was looking for new residents, and so that's how they came to immigrate to Villa General Belgrano. We continue maintaining the German language in our house. Both my husband and I speak German, and we made sure that our daughters would also know the language.
German is no longer the main language that's spoken here. Now it's Spanish, but there's no doubt that this village remains dependent on its history, whether or not its true colors are always shown.
People come here because they're attracted to the architecture that looks so European. I'm Argentinian. I was born here in this town, so I'm more Argentinian than anything else, but we have an affinity to our German history. It's important to transmit this to our children and that they should be proud of the sacrifices that their ancestors made to come here and build this beautiful town.
The version you get in history books goes like this. In late April 1945, Berlin is collapsing under Soviet artillery. The Red Army is closing in on the government quarters block by block. Deep underground, in the concrete warren, where the Führer bunker, Hitler is a wrecked figure, physically shaking, paranoid, lashing out at generals who no longer command real armies. On April 29th, he marries Eva Braun in a tiny bunker ceremony, dictates his political testament, and then the next day, the story says he and Eva withdrew to his private room. Moments later, a gunshot is heard. Staff enter, find Hitler dead from a gunshot wound and poison. Eva is dead also from cyanide poisoning. Their bodies are carried upstairs, doused in gasoline in a shattered garden of the Reich Chancellery and set on fire under incoming Soviet fire. Soviet troops eventually take the area, recover the charred remains, and announce that Hitler is dead. On paper, that sounds like closure, but even in 1945, there were cracks. The remains are in Soviet hands only. No British or American team is allowed to independently verify them. Stalin himself hints to Western leaders that maybe Hitler got away. Soviet press puts out confusing, sometimes contradictory accounts. The body is supposed to have been burned, buried, dug up again, moved, then quietly destroyed years later by the KGB. What survives, we're told, is a jawbone and some dental work in a Moscow archive. And for decades, nobody outside the Soviet system is allowed to get near them. No public autopsy, no photographs of recognizable body parts, no courtroom with Hitler on the dock. The most hated man of the 20th century, the one person everyone would have watched a trial for, dies off camera in a locked room controlled by one of the least transparent regimes on Earth. You don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to see how this leaves space for doubt. Fast forward to the late 20th and early 21st centuries, and you finally get a small burst of access, a piece of skull with a bullet hole, shown off in Moscow and said to be Hitler's. Turns out, under testing, to belong to a woman. The fragment had been presented for years as physical proof of Hitler's death, and suddenly, it isn't it anymore. Russian authorities insist the jaw and teeth are still genuine, perhaps even if the head bone isn't. And in 2018, a French team compares them to wartime x-rays and dental charts and concludes they match Hitler's dental records, arguing he did, in fact, die in a bunker. But for people who already distrust official stories, the fact that one key Hitler skull artifact turned out to be someone else's is enough to keep the door to escape theory open wide. If one part of the physical story was wrong or misrepresented, what else might be? It would be easy enough to fake dental record. To understand why the escape theory has such staying power, you have to move out of Berlin and look what was happening thousands of miles away in South America, long before the war ended. Argentina had a deep German presence and a government under Juan Perón that was at least sympathetic to parts of the Axis and openly welcomed European migrants afterward. Declassified material modern research, so that Argentina became one of the main endpoints for ratlines, clandestine escapes, routes that moved Nazi officials, SS officers, and collaborators out of Europe using the help of a sympathetic clergy, forged Red Cross papers, and networks through Spain and Italy. In recent years, Argentina has been declassifying roughly 1,850 documents related to these routes, and even unearthed dozens of boxes of Nazi-linked material in a Supreme Court basement, reinforcing how deeply those networks run. We know for a fact that high-ranking Nazis Nazis like Eichmann and Mengele escaped justice and lived there for years in South America. So the question people ask is pretty simple. If they could do it, why not Hitler? Now add the submarines. In July and August of 1945, months after Germany surrendered, two German U-boats, a U-530 and a U-977, surfaced off Mar del Plata, Argentina, and surrendered. On paper, both had plausible explanations. Confusion over surrender order, fear of becoming POWs, decision by their captains to head for a friendly country instead of giving up to the Allies in Europe. But the timing is pretty strange. These subs had been at sea for a very long time. Their logs raise questions. There are gaps, odd routes choices, and in the aftermath, rumors. Were they carrying cargo, gold, secret documents, or people? Allied interrogators pressed the crews hard about whether they had dropped someone off, especially Nazi leaders along the Argentina coastline or in Patagonia, before turning themselves in. Officially, nothing was proven. Unofficially, the image of German submarines gliding up to a remote shore months after the war ended and quietly discharging passengers at night has become one of the more core visual beats of the escape story. Those images aren't just imagination. Some of them come from actual eyewitness claims recorded in post-war documents.
Thank you so much for your time. We have some questions for you. If we go back for a moment, how old were you in 1945? What were you engaged in?
Construction.
Okay, great. What I'd like to ask you, just in general terms, what you saw, if anything, related to Germans or Nazis in Spain.
In the año 45, 1945, I was doing secret construction inside the monasterio in Samos. We had to build secret compartments, like tunnels.
Los alemanes.
And these Germans were Nazis?
Alemanes, Nazis, sí, Nazis.
Yes. And one of these guys was Adolf Hitler. He was right there. He wasn't wearing mustache or anything.
No, Hitler.
So, just for clarification, which month?
May 1945. I realized it was really Hitler because of the airplane.
Tell me about the airplane.
Me fui a trabajar a otra parte.
I went to another town. The first thing I saw in this new town was a German airplane. The airplane landed in a potato field that this old man owned. And asked him, how many people came in that plane? He said, it was 5 people, and they were German.
Did anybody that you know saw Hitler and get off that plane and told you this?
The owner of the farm, many times, he kept asking that, do you think it was Hitler? And the people said, like, yeah.
So Hitler was on that plane, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Where exactly was the location of this plane?
In a little small town,
que se llama Corners.
Perfecto.
Set of FBI-linked accounts, highlighted in later books and articles, describe coastal witnesses in Argentina who say the two German submarines surfaced near their shorelines one night in 1945, that a group of perhaps 50 people disembarked in the dark and made their way into waiting buses, and that those buses drove them inland without any lights or markings. These stories are secondhand, and from an historian standpoint, uncorroborated, but they existed in the official files. Someone sat in front of an American or Argentinian official and said, I saw this. And that story was serious enough that it was typed up, circulated, and in some cases, sent across borders. For believers, the blend of U-boat reality and a nighttime bus convoy feels less like fantasy and more like a partially uncovered operation. If you follow those buses in your mind, the trail tends to lead to one place, Patagonia. In the mountains around San Carlos, German communities and Nazi sympathizers really did put down roots. Bariloche became known as a haven for ex-Nazis. Journalists and historians have documented local rumors of former SSF officers living there under their own names, and others under new identities. There are persistent stories of Grand Lakeside estates, sometimes identified as a specific house, said to have hosted a mysterious German VIP with heavy security in the late 1940s and early 1950s. Locals talk about supply trucks, restricted access, and German-speaking guards. Some of those stories whispered in bars and passed down to families, the hidden guest has simply been El Jefe, the boss. When later writers went back and put a face and a name to the boss, the myth of Hitler hiding in Bariloche practically wrote itself. Alongside the place-based rumors, you have personal I saw him accounts. Over the years, Argentinians in various towns have told reporters or relatives they have encountered an older German man with a distinctive mustache and presence, guarded by men who look like ex-soldiers. None of these accounts rise to the level of photographic proof. They are memories, often reported decades after the fact, colored by local lore and the knowledge that Nazis really had lived nearby. But if you're building a conspiracy narrative, they become puzzle pieces. The submarine landings, the nighttime buses, the isolated estates, the charismatic foreigner everyone is afraid to name out loud. If you put them together, you get a picture that, while blurry, is emotionally convincing to a lot of people. It wasn't just locals and bar conversations keeping this rumor alive. Western intelligence agencies kept the question open for far longer than many people realize. The FBI's publicly available Hitler file, hundreds of pages you can read today, shows that in years right after the war, the Bureau collected and reviewed a steady stream of reports claiming Hitler was alive. Some said he was in Argentina, others in Brazil, or elsewhere in South America. The FBI treated most of these as low probability, but not automatically impossible. Memos survived where senior officials acknowledged that there was no hard evidence of Hitler's death available to them in 1945 and 1946, and that until they had more, they couldn't absolutely rule out that he might have escaped. That's very different from saying that they believe he did, but it shows that for a while, even inside the system, he might be out there. Wasn't considered completely crazy. Inside those FBI files are specific, detailed tips that read like scenes from a thriller. In one cluster of documents later publicized in books and articles, an informant describes a network that allegedly moved Hitler from a collapsing bunker into an aircraft, then into a sub, and finally into Argentina's soil, where an estate had been prepared for him. The informant names people, describes the estate's location in terms of rivers and landmarks, and insists that local authorities were complicit. The FBI doesn't validate this story. Notes attached to some memos make it clear the Bureau doubted the source's reliability. But the very existence of these narratives in official channels is enough for many listeners to feel that it's kind of like proof that at least some people close to the events thought an escape plan was technically possible, and maybe even in motion. Then there are the CIA's documents, which pushed the story beyond Argentina and to Colombia. One now famous 1955 memo, declassified and available on CIA's reading room site, a CIA station reports an informant codenamed Simelity has passed along the claim from a former SS man, Philip Catrone. And Catrone insisted he met Hitler regularly in a town called Tijuana, Colombia, where the dictator was supposedly living under the alias Adolf Schittelmeier in a community of ex-Nazis. Attached to the memo is a now widely shared photograph. Two men on a bench, one identified as Catrone, and the other said to be Hitler. Older, heavier, but recognizable to those who want to see the resemblance. In the back of the photo, the writing supposedly reads, Adolf Schittelmeier, Tijuana, Colombia, 1954. The CIA doesn't take this for gospel. The memo itself notes that the source's reliability is unknown and that the whole story could be fantastic. Later coverage of the document often points out that the CIA headquarters essentially filed it away rather than launching a massive global manhunt. But again, if you're paying attention to the pattern, you notice certain things. Forma puts his name on the line. A former SS officer is willing to claim in the 1950s that he not only saw Hitler, but spoke with him on a monthly basis in South America. Someone risks stealing a photograph of this supposed meeting and getting to American intelligence. And years later, that photo ends up in a CIA file that the public can read. Regardless of whether the man in the picture really is Hitler, that's an extraordinary chain of belief, action, and documentation. The CIA has other material in this orb too. One declassified document simply reads, Hitler's hideout in Argentina. It relays information from a source about a possible Hitler refuge in the country, including geographic clues and a description of a compound. The memo explicitly says the reliability of the source is unknown, but it's there in black and white in an official CIA file. When people say even the CIA thought Hitler escaped, they're usually pointing at pages like this. Not a conclusion, not a stamp of certainty, but evidence that questions could he still be alive was investigated at an official level years after the war in multiple countries based on eyewitnesses or informant claims. Beyond governments, there are a lot of private testimonies and local legends that swirl around this topic. In those German Argentina communities, older residents sometimes tell stories of a man they weren't supposed to talk about, a guest who arrived quietly, was surrounded by security, and seemed to command deference without any formal title. In remote ranches and small hotels, people also claim to have seen sketches or photographs long since destroyed. An older man with a familiar voice, a barber who was told to shave a mustache but not too short, a doctor who swears he was asked to treat a patient under a false name with the same ailments Hitler was reported to have in Berlin. None of these stories stand up as evidence on its own, but taken together, they form sort of a oral conspiracy archive that can be incredibly persuasive if you live inside it. Overlay in the human layer is the structural one. We know that Argentina and other South American countries weren't just randomly attracted to fleeing Nazis. They were actively prepared as destinations. Recently declassified Argentina documents show how officials facilitated the arrival and protection of Nazi figures and the discovery of more than 80 boxes of Nazi-related material propaganda and correspondence in a court basement reinforces how extensive those ties were. When people argue that Hitler could have escaped, they point to this infrastructure. You had shipping routes, sympathetic embassies, corrupt officials, false identities, money pipelines, even pre-war ideology beachheads laid by Nazi propaganda in places like Bariloche. It's not hard to picture how certain people might have been moved along those channels in the order that had been given. So what do we do with all of this? On one side, you have mainstream historians in a body of forensic work saying he died in Berlin. We have matching dental records, multiple eyewitnesses from inside the bunker, and every serious official inquiry has landed on that conclusion. On the other, you have unanswered questions about Soviet handling of the remains, a misidentified skull fragment, German submarines arriving in South America after the surrender, documented Nazi rat lines in Argentina, FBI and CIA files full of tips and informant stories, a photograph from Colombia, and decades of local eyewitness claims in two continents. If you want a neat, clean answer, this is not the story for you. The record here is pretty messy, fragmented, and emotionally charged. Notice how often the words unsubstantiated, questionable reliability, and rumor pop up in documents. But also notice that the documents existed at all. The FBI didn't toss every Hitler and Argentina letter in the trash. They logged and evaluated them. The CIA didn't just laugh at Z Melody and his SS friend Citron. They wrote up the report, attached the photo, and circulated it. Argentina governments didn't eagerly open their archives. They held on to thousands of pages of Nazi-related files for decades, and now we're only starting to release them. None of that proves Hitler escaped. But if your baseline assumption is that powerful institutions hide things, it kind of feels like smoke. And where people see smoke, you're going to be looking for that fire as well. At the same time, there are hard practical questions that any he escaped scenario has to answer. How do you move from one of the most recognizable faces on Earth through a collapsing capital, cross front lines into an aircraft, or out of a city totally surrounded by enemy troops? How do you get him into a submarine without someone talking? How do you hide him for years among people who know exactly who he is, in towns where everyone gossips? In a world where Allied intelligence is explicitly hunting for Nazi fugitives, what kind of plastic surgery, disguise, or controlled environment would it take? Some escape narratives try to solve this by shrinking the circle. Only a tiny core of ultra-loyalists know the truth. Everyone else thinks he died in Berlin. That's possible in theory. But every new eyewitness story you add, every barber, every doctor, every driver, increases the number of people who would have to keep it a secret perfectly for many decades. And yet, if history has taught us anything, it's that impossible sounding things do sometimes happen. Eichmann really did vanish into a normal looking light in Buenos Aires until the Mossad team grabbed him off the streets. And Jelly really did move between countries, farming and practicing medicine under false papers, and died on a Brazilian beach, never in having stood trial. There is documented Nazi presence in Bariloche and other parts of Argentina that went deep into local politics and business. There are genuine mysteries about certain German U-boats and their cargo. There are intelligence files that hint at things we still don't fully understand. So when someone says maybe the biggest Nazi of all slipped through our fingers, they're plugging that ideal into a landscape that already has real stories of escape. Tonight we've walked through the landscape piece by piece. The burned bodies in a bunker under Soviet control. The misidentified skull fragment. The jawbone in Moscow that some scientists say matches Hitler's teeth. The German submarine surface seen in Argentina months after the war. Eyewitnesses claim of nighttime landings and secret bus convoys, the Nazi enclaves of Patagonia, the FBI memos taking Hitler and Argentina tips seriously enough to file them, the CIA's Hitler hideout memo, the photograph from Colombia labeled Adolf Schattenmeier, the informer who swore he talked to Hitler monthly in a South American town, the Argentine archive full of ratline documents only now coming into light. We put as much as possible on the table as we could in one setting, not to close the case, but to show you why the case never really closes for a lot of people. So where does this leave us tonight? With two overlapping stories running at the same time, and one Hitler dies in Berlin in April of 1945, a dictator choosing suicide and fire over surrender. His remains half destroyed, his fate confirmed mostly through the testimony of those around him, the thief left in Moscow vault, and other, he gets out. By plane, by U-boat, by ratline, threaded through sympathetic priest and friendly ports, and ends up on a ranch in Argentina or a beach in Colombia, living in the shadows among the very networks that he created. The first story is the one in the textbooks. The second one is in the classified files, late night conversations, and grainy declassified photographs. Which story you lean towards says as much about you and how you see power, secrecy, and institution as it does about 1945. Maybe it doesn't really matter in the end whether he died died in that bunker or slipped away in the dark. The man himself is gone either way. What lingers is the way the question clings to us. We keep circling the story, not because we secretly want Hitler to have lived, but because we've unsettled by the ideal that something so huge, so monstrous, can vanish into a badly written report in a locked drawer in somebody else's archive. We want evil to end in a courtroom, under bright lights, with a verdict and a final image we can all agree on. Instead, we get a fire, rubble, contradictions, missing bones, and decades of classified files. And in that space, our imaginations do exactly what they're wired to do. They start looking for doors where there might only be cracks. Maybe that's the real conspiracy here. Not a single secret submarine run, not a hidden ranch in the Andes. The simple fact that power almost never gives us clean stories. It leaves us with redactions and partial answers and demands that we trust what we can't see. Some people can live with that. Others fill the silence with theories. Whether Hitler escaped or not, the system that allowed his officers and architects to build quiet lives on the far side of the world is very real. The paper trails are real. The governments that buried those trails for half a century are real. That's the part of the story we know, and it's ugly enough on its own. So maybe the question isn't, did he get away? So much as, why are we still chasing him? Maybe we keep following his shadow into the mountains and across the ocean because it's easier to hunt one ghost than to face the boring, grinding truth that evil rarely ties itself off neatly. It bleeds into new passports, new uniforms, new institutions. It survives in the people who weren't in the bunker at all. You can walk away tonight convinced he died in Berlin, or half convinced he didn't, or suspended somewhere between the middle. The tape doesn't care. The archives don't care. What matters is what those loose ends do to your senses of how the world works. Do they make you certain that everything is a lie, or do they remind you to move through the world with a little bit more doubt, a little bit more patience, a little bit more insistence on seeing the evidence for yourself? That's where I'm going to leave you tonight, in that narrow space between certainty and paranoia, where the real work of thinking lives. Not every gap in the record is a cover-up. Not every official story is the truth. Most of the time, history is just a bad signal picked up on a damaged receiver. We're all trying to decide what is noise and what is real. I'm David. This is Zero Signal. Please, stay curious, stay skeptical, and keep listening to the quiet parts, where the story doesn't quite line up. That's where the important questions usually are. Until next time, we are Zero Signal, and we're out.